Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 12 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we are proud members of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. We have with us this week Dave Mullins from the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, the ITA, and he is going to bring us up to speed on all the things that the ITA has in the works, new initiatives that they are implementing, and we're going to touch briefly on the NCAA tournament coming up in a few weeks here. That is a combined tournament for all Division I, II, and III players and schools. So excited for y'all to hear what Dave has to say. The ITA has some really, really interesting stuff on the horizon, and I'm thrilled, as always, to chat with him. Before I bring him on, though, just a quick reminder, if you haven't already, we'd love for you to become a premium member of Parenting Aces. Just go to our website, parentingaces.com, click on the join button, and it will take you through the easy peasy steps to make that happen. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Dave Mullins of the ITA. Hey, Dave Mullins, so good to see you and get you back on the podcast. It's been several months, and there's so much going on at the Intercollegiate Tennis Association. I can't wait for you to fill in our audience.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Yeah, no, always great to be on with you, Lisa. I was thinking back to our first podcast many years ago when I was struggling to get a line from Dublin. I was struggling with the internet connection and all the rest of it. But we've come a long way. You've got this great background. I'm back in America. And like you said, got lots going on at the ITA. I know you've had several staff members with Danielle and Tim on recently. So hopefully your audience isn't getting tired of hearing from the ITA.
Well, you know, given that for most junior tennis players, playing in college is the goal. It's the carrot. And I think we can never share too much information about what it means to work toward that goal, what needs to happen along the way, and then what it means once you've attained that goal. You know, what is college tennis? What's involved? What is the role of the parent? What is the role of the player? What's the role of the junior coach once the player's in college? So there's so many different facets that I don't think we can ever run out of things to talk about when we have ITA folks on. And I'm very appreciative that you guys are always so willing to have conversations with us. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about, which I think is super cool and something that our audience may not know the ITA is involved in, is the Collegiate Wheelchair Championships that just took place at the USTA main campus in Lake Nona. Fill us in, Dave. What prompted the ITA to create this event? How many participants did you have? How did you recruit players? How is wheelchair tennis functioning on college campuses? Lots of info.
Well, firstly, I need to be clear. We didn't run the event. The USTA ran the event. They've been running it for several years out in Lake Nona. This is our first year having any interaction really with it whatsoever. I was out there for a few days. One of our marketing team, Zach Pullman, was out there covering the action, and really both of us and all our staff trying to learn more about this space. Jason Harnett at the USDA is somebody you should definitely have on your show. He is an amazing individual that has really dedicated his professional career to advancing wheelchair tennis, and what he's done at the USDA, you know, it's really his vision that's coming to light, and he'll take no credit for it. But we met with Jason about a year ago and started having conversations with how the ITA can help with collegiate wheelchair. At that time, the USOPC, the NCAA were starting to become more interested in this space. Tennis has really separated itself. Basketball do a great job. Para track and field is obviously another space that they're interested in maybe one day becoming a true NCAA sport, an emerging sport within where these sports belong within an athletic department. They get the same resources that the regular able-bodied student athletes receive. They get academic advisors, they get athletic scholarships, they get cost of attendance stipends, they get to train in the same facilities as the able body. Ultimately, that's where we all wanted to go. And what I love about Jason is that he's playing the long game. He's not looking for overnight success. And same with us here at the ITA. We're playing the long game and having these conversations with the NCAA, having these conversations with the USOPC. And the type of structure that Jason has been able to implement at the grassroots level, he believes there's going to be a deluge of wheelchair players coming through in the next 2 to 4 years, looking for places to bring their talents and extend their tennis career, just like the able-bodied side. So we're committed to doing whatever we can to help with that process. And we're actually starting a wheelchair membership. So I think, Lisa, you know that we have 5 divisions of college tennis. We have a membership category for each division. We're changing our bylaws in a few weeks to now extend to a wheelchair collegiate division. And so, you know, it's early days. We've much to learn, but we're going to implement or integrate wheelchair tennis, you know, awards, coach education, tournaments, rankings, governance, everything that we do on the able body side, we'll be doing for wheelchair tennis. So I'm super excited about the direction it's going.
So how many participants did y'all have this year? Do you know?
Yeah, so we had about 10 teams. Teams were anywhere from 2 to about 6 players. Mm-hmm. The way it's currently set up is that there's an affiliate. So you can be an affiliate of the university. Maybe you're the partner of a professor. Maybe you're a professor yourself. Maybe you work in the canteen. I don't know. You know, so you're allowed to be an affiliate member, even if you're practicing with the team on a regular basis. You're showing up for practice. So right now, the eligibility requirements are very loose just to gain some momentum. Mm-hmm. So some of the players there are true student athletes taking, you know, full-time academic schedule, and others are affiliate members, and then you've others in between. And so, they were playing a dual match. So it's a doubles, followed by 2 singles. So okay. 2 out of the 3 win the dual match. And then they had singles draws later in the day, just like we do on the able-bodied side. So it was, so something that they've hovered the last few years between kind of 8 and 12 teams. Sometimes teams go away because if you don't have a true champion on the campus and a player graduates and, you know, a coach leaves or something like that, the team goes away, unfortunately. And so how do we create that momentum going forward and not put the brakes on it? It's easy for people to come in and say, okay, full-time students only. And then you lose that momentum. So we have to be very careful with the timing. Mm-hmm. When do we start introducing some eligibility components to it? What do the NCAA expect? You know, they need to lead us a little bit over what timeline. So lots going on, lots to learn, but like I said, playing the long game here, Lisa.
I love that. Well, given that when this airs, we will be into May, which means a wind down of the academic year. I really want to talk about the ITA summer circuit, what the plans are for this year, how people sign up, you know, what the different pathways are through the summer circuit, et cetera. So lead us through that discussion.
Sure. Yeah. We, memberships are open right now. So if a player wants to purchase a membership for the summer, they can go on our website. There's various banners there and different places they can go. They'll find it easily, or just type in the search bar, summer circuit, and they'll find all the details they'll need. So they can buy their membership now. It's $35 for a membership, and then play as many tournaments as they want throughout the summer. They do have an entry fee aligned with each. So I don't want to make them say they pay $35 and then all the tournaments are free. You know, we take a tiny percentage of most of the money goes to the coaches, and they're the ones that run the tournament, and they either use it to help with ongoing costs they have or help with assistant pay, et cetera. And so we have about 60 tournaments on college campuses. Wow. Over a 6-week period. It culminates with a summer ITA Summer National Championship in Tallahassee at Florida State. And so players pick up points. The top five receive a travel stipend to travel out to Florida State. And the winners of that event get wild cards into our ITA All-American Championships in the fall. So we have about a 50-50 split. You have about 50% our participants are college players, and the other 50% are rising junior seniors that are getting ready to maybe play in college next year or in the next couple of years. So I think it's a healthy mix, a healthy balance of levels. It will be, you know, categorized by WTN this year, so they'll have different draws. It depends on number of entries, but trying to keep players in a similar WTN range to make sure they get competitive matches and get what they need. So they can check it out. wearecollegetennis.com, and they can find all the details there.
And we'll have the links in the show notes on parentingaces.com as well. Just to kind of dig in a little deeper to the ITA Summer Circuit, you said it's open to high school players, college players. Is there an automatic acceptance if you sign up for the event, or are the draws limited, or does that vary tournament to tournament?
It varies tournament to tournament. So the players, parents, whoever signing up, they definitely need to go in and look at the different criteria for each tournament. But my experience is, Lisa, that most of the players get in, a very high percentage. Every so often it doesn't work out, court limitations, number of days, etc. But for the most part, if you're entered and you know you're committed to playing the sport, if you're playing the summer circuit tournaments, you're a serious tennis player.
Right.
And so I think you'll find opportunities there as needed.
And just to clarify, most of the events have both singles and doubles. Mm-hmm. Most of them have a consolation bracket. Mm-hmm. Again, it depends on court availability and timing and all of that. But it's an incredible opportunity for junior players to test their mettle against existing college players and to understand what it looks like to be on the court with a collegiate player. I mean, that was when my son did it, which was, you know, however many years ago now, but I thought it was such an eye-opening experience for him to realize that certain aspects of his game were absolutely on track and ready for him to play in college. And then there were other aspects that still needed a little bit of work to get him over that hump and ready to get recruited and be competitive in college.
For sure. Yeah, there's so many benefits. And then being on a college campus as well, being on those courts, maybe you've gone to watch some of those matches and now you're getting to play on the courts and getting to speak with other college players, even just about their experience. You know, maybe you play somebody and you hit it off and, hey, tell me about your process. How did you end up at this college? And what advice would you have for me? And, you know, getting to interact with the coaches there that are running the tournament. And I used to be a college coach, as you know, at the University of Oklahoma, and I ran these every summer and I love them. I absolutely got to know all these players from other schools, from other parts of the countries, and just hearing about their stories. You'd have some guys who, you know, three of them sleeping in a car, driving around from one to the other, and And then everything in between, you know, we'd have some players come in that we were recruiting. So we get a chance to watch them right in front of us, which and get them to interact with some of our players. And then, yeah, an opportunity for our players who are either local or, you know, there for summer school, getting them to participate. So they're great events. It's been they've been going on, I don't know, Lisa, for 30 years. It's, yeah. It's evolved. It continues to evolve and hopefully continue to get better.
Right. It's one of my favorite offerings of the ITA, I have to be honest with you, because I feel like for junior players, there's no better way to see where you stand and to understand, you know, like I said, the work that still needs to be done between the current day and the day you matriculate onto a college campus. And like you were saying, Dave, you know, and I tell kids and parents this all the time, if you're going to be at these events, use it as a networking opportunity. Talk to players from different schools, ask the hard questions, because you'll get more candid information from the players than you might get from the coaches. Mm-hmm. The players are a little freer with their opinions and their willingness to share some of the nitty gritty of what it means to be a student athlete on their particular campus.
Yeah, and they're going through it right now. I mean, they're closest to that experience. Yeah. I mean, even people ask me advice. I'm reluctant to provide the advice sometimes because I'm so far removed from that process now, and it's changed. I mean, mm-hmm. again, coming from Ireland in 1998 with no internet to what it is now, it's the process has evolved dramatically. I just went through it with my eldest son on the soccer side, so. Mm-hmm. It's I guess I'm refamiliarized myself with that process, but yeah, any chance you get to just soak up and learn from others, whether it's on the court, off the court, take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, shifting gears a little bit, because you know the big news of the year with collegiate tennis in terms of American players is the affiliateship, partnership, I don't know what the terminology is, but with USTA and World Tennis Number, and kind of severing ties a little bit with Universal Tennis, moving away from UTR into WTN. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of bring us up to speed on how that's working so far and what may be coming down the pike for junior players that they need to be aware of?
Yeah. We have it's a shared initiatives agreement with the USTA is okay. What it's called. So there's several buckets that we're working together on and making sure we're not duplicating efforts, because mm-hmm. USTA also have a collegiate department. They also have a collegiate pathway committee that I've sat on in the past and volunteers trying to provide advice and feedback and brainstorming ideas on different things that we can do. And so we've had, you know, nonstop meetings, as you can imagine, Lisa, over the last several years, and figuring out who's doing what in what space, and how do we best leverage the resources that we have in front of us. And I think one area I think the USTA and the ITA recognize is that there just hasn't been a lot of great advice out there on the pathway to college tennis. You've been filling the void. A lot of other folks have been filling that void, and how do we assist with that process? How do we ensure that if you're a young student athlete, 14 years old, say freshman in high school, you want to go down this pathway, you need to find places to go to get that advice. So how do we provide better advice online? How do we work more closely with maybe the USTA sections? One idea we piloted last year was actually a regional coaches workshop in Chicago. So I think, you know, Lisa, we do an annual coaches convention, which is coming up in a few weeks' time in Lake Nona during the NCAA championships. But we're trying to figure out what is the future of conventions. I understood in 1988, if you wanted to learn from Nick Bollettieri, you had to go fly to Florida and go to some convention he was presenting at. But in 2023, in this virtual world, is that necessary? It's very expensive. It's expensive for us to run. It's expensive for our coaches to be there. So could we work on these regional workshops? So we did it last year in Chicago. It was a 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So coaches within 3 hours could drive be there for the day, get back. It's a full day, but it's worthwhile. We had college coaches, we had high school coaches, we had academy coaches there, all learning from one another. And we got some feedback from them. What would make this more worthwhile? And they all said, well, maybe a showcase where we can come and recruit. Maybe it's the day before, maybe it's half day of a showcase, half day of coach education. And so this is something we really want to start trying to pilot here over the next year. Maybe it happens a day before a sectional close tournament. And so the coaches come in on a Friday, full day of coach education. They stay overnight, and Saturday, Sunday, Monday, et cetera, they're recruiting at this event. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely encourage parents, players to be on the lookout for those opportunities. Maybe the coach education piece also helps get more coaches there and they feel like there's more value. They can either use their coach education development fund or their recruiting fund to get them there. So this is an area where I think us at the ITA and our bandwidth is so limited. I mean, there's so many things we could be doing, should be doing. We're starting a student athlete council next year. I mean, everybody has ideas. It's what can we actually do? But usually we have to give something up. So maybe are we giving up the convention to focus on those regional workshops? Maybe, and no decision's been made yet. But those are things that a combination of virtual opportunities and in person. And I think the USTA and the USTA sections are all on board with college tennis. I think, you know, Lisa, for many years, there wasn't a huge amount of interest. You know, the fact that we're getting interest now from the ITF, from the ATP, you know, about our accelerator program. People are paying attention to college tennis like never before. And that's exciting for you and I, who are so passionate about the sport. The fact that all these other entities now are taking note and investing in college tennis it's exciting. And we've got to manage that momentum and make sure we take advantage of it.
Sure, sure. The thing I think is so cool about these regional coach workshops is the fact that you're integrating the junior coaches, because one of my big complaints for years has been that the junior coaches don't really understand anything beyond the top tier D1 programs. Right. They're really knowledgeable about those and how, you know, what it takes to get there, but they're not as knowledgeable about the rest of Division 1, 2, 3 NAIA junior colleges. I mean, and there are some incredible playing opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
And the majority of junior tennis players aren't going to those top tier D1 schools. Mm-hmm. And so when families and coaches are complaining that, you know, these teams are made up of, you know, majority international players and there's no spots for our kids, there are plenty of college tennis opportunities for American kids. There are plenty of college tennis scholarships available if you broaden the scope, if you widen that funnel. And I believe that starts with the junior coaches getting educated and then in turn educating the families that they're coaching about these different opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Everyone in that pathway along that timeline needs to be better informed, and they've got to take responsibility for that as well. And there is lots of information out there, but how do we make sure we're pointing everybody in the right direction with the most up-to-date information, the most helpful information, and again, doing a better job of spreading that word? I mean, yes, if we say there's 5,000 student athletes in tennis graduating here in the next, you know, a few weeks, that's 5,000 opportunities for the sake of math. We'll say 2,500 on the men's side, 2,500 on the women's side. I think there's 200 or 300 players in the U.S. that maybe play 10 tournaments or more per year. I don't know the exact number. So let's say there's another 2,000 positions there that need to be filled. A lot of those, yeah, there's international component to that. But there's so many great, I mean, I've been exposed now at the ITA. Again, my experience was at the top of Division I, but I've been exposed to all these coaches, all these programs at every division, and they're fantastic. I mean, there's so many great opportunities out there. And I, like I said, I've just seen my son go through this process, and players on his soccer team, and every sport has the same mentality. or the parents, the players, they only think of the top of Division One, and then they leave it so late, and then they're out of opportunities, and now they're kicking themselves because they didn't take that D3 opportunity that now looks amazing, and they jump at it and they regret it. And so it's just keeping an open mind, and we can keep preaching at least. I listen right. all the time, and I know you're constantly open your mind to these opportunities.
Yeah.
Have these student athletes. I mean, that's something it was easy for me, I said, to guide my son, because he was very clear. You know, we for many years were speaking about what's your criteria? What are you looking for? He knew he wanted to be in an urban setting. We'd lived in Oklahoma for 8 years. He's like, I want to be in the city. Yeah. He didn't care about the weather. He wanted a good business school. He wanted to go somewhere where he could make an impact on the team straight away. He wanted to go somewhere where he could get a good scholarship. Ideally, he wanted to be somewhere close to family if possible, and I mean extended family. Mm-hmm. And so he's ended up at DePaul in Chicago. He's on a great scholarship. He'll go in August. You know, everything that he listed out, he ticked all those boxes, but he kept an open mind, even though I knew he could play at the Division I level. At very early, his list, Lisa, was, I mean, we had 30, 40 schools from all divisions. And he kept an open mind to it, even though, okay, you're saying you want to play pro soccer, you want to play in a top conference, Division I, et cetera. We don't know what's going to happen. So keep an open mind. And fortunately, it all worked out. We did the work, we did the research, et cetera. But his initial list was wide open.
Yeah, I love that. And it's important, you know, there are different experiences to be had at different schools. And, you know, the top tier D1 experience isn't for every player. No. It isn't for every family. I mean, it is a very different experience to play at a Division I school that's competing for a national championship versus even playing for a Division I school that's not competing for a national championship and is real about that, you know, understands the limitations of what they have to offer versus playing at D2, D3. So I'm glad to hear that your son had a positive recruiting experience and that he seems to have found his right fit. I'll be curious to check in with you next year and see how that first year goes. But, you know, I think when you put that effort in to define what it is you want, what you're looking for, and listen, a 14, 15 year old, even an 18 year old doesn't always know exactly what they want, but at least get the thought process going and entertain the various options and give yourself the best chance of finding the right fit by visiting a variety of schools, by interacting with a variety of coaches and players from those schools and understanding what the experience is like.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually spoke with a family, an Irish family here in Phoenix, Arizona, whose daughter is a junior. And she's dealt with a lot of injuries recently. Mm-hmm. And they honestly, Lisa, they had no idea that all these opportunities existed. Mm-hmm. You know, they had gone to some Arizona State matches and U of A matches and you know, Stanford's coming in and Cal's coming in. And they quite genuinely thought these were the only opportunities to play college tennis. And when I sat down with them and, you know, showed them all the opportunities, say, in the Southwest, in California, at the different divisions, explained kind of the different philosophies, you know, Division III doesn't have athletic scholarships. I talked about tennis on campus. And their eyes were, and they were so relieved because they thought her window was closed. There was no way she could play college tennis. She's had these injuries. It's like, no, there's a whole world out there for her if this is what she wants to do. It's just figuring out what her criteria is. And with those injuries, tennis hasn't, you know, her academics have come to the forefront and she wants to find that balance. She's recognized that the top of Division I, what's happening in Arizona State, like you said, that wouldn't be a good fit for her, even if she was able to play there. And she wants a lot more balanced experience in college. So I just keep an open mind.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Last thing I really want to dig into is this new student athlete council. and how that came about, and what it's charged with doing this first year.
Yeah, so this is one of the ideas that when we sit around the boardroom table with our board members, and this is an idea that's bubbled up over the last year or so. And I think if you're looking at the tea leaves a little bit more and focus, you know, recognizing what the NCA are working on, and there's a lot more student involvement, student athlete involvement in.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, and giving that feedback, it's another perspective that absolutely is necessary and required. And you also have to, again, get the right people. You have to get the right people on these committees, whether regardless of age or experience. So this is something we felt like, okay, let's give this a go. Let's have, again, representation from each of the five divisions, six divisions, as we talked about, wheelchair tennis. Yeah. So we're going to have 10 student athletes. The application period will start in May. It's a two-part process. So if they get through the first round, there's another application they need to go through and write a letter. I mean, we want those that are fully committed to being part of this process and really taking ownership of it. It's not that myself or Tim Russell or somebody else is coming up with the agenda and speaking over everybody. And it's no, you guys work together. We have an executive committee. We'll get on as you need us. We'll be on, you know, on a semi-regular basis as required. But we want that feedback from you guys. Mm-hmm. So the first meeting will be scheduled sometime in September. And really they're charged with providing feedback on how the student athlete experience as a college tennis can be better. What can the ITA do? What can the USTA to influence that, whether it's with our championships that we do as the ITA, the NCAA championships, our summer circuit, how might the USTA be more involved? You know, do they have ideas around marketing? How do we better market our college tennis? What is their age group? What is their demographic? I mean, a lot of people are talking about linear TV. Well, yeah, you and I, Lisa, watch linear TV, but my 17-year-old doesn't.
Right.
You know, so what are we doing for this next generation? What is that mix? You know, what are some of the things that we could be doing to better celebrate our student athletes and our teams and our coaches? So it's really just adding a new, fresh perspective. Obviously, we get lots of feedback from our coaches, board of directors, various volunteer staff members. But traditionally, we haven't had that feedback from the student athletes. And then how do we keep them in the game longer? So now they've served on this committee. They're invested in college tennis. Hopefully, they've had a great experience. And hey, let's keep you in the tennis industry. And there's lots of different opportunities within the tennis industry. You know, it can look differently for everybody. If you're not, you know, if you want to go be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it is, there's all these volunteering opportunities, and we need fresh people. We need fresh faces. We need the next generation of tennis volunteers coming through, because every year that group's getting older and older, and we need the next generation to come in and protect our sport for following generations. So, yeah. So again, we'll learn a lot. We'll get feedback in this first year and hopefully continue to make it better and apply some of the things that they're looking for us to do.
I love that. So to begin with, it sounds like it's going to be more of sort of an advisory council where they come together, share ideas amongst themselves, and then present those to the ITA and hopefully partner with the, well, not partner with, but utilize the resources of the ITA and its relationship with the USTA and the NCAA to implement the things that need to be changed or upgraded or started for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you've articulated it far better than I have.
But I love this whole idea that then these committee members, these advisory group members are, you know, after their college tennis years are finished, now they're the champions for the sport. They're the spokespeople out in their communities, in their respective industries. As you said, even if they choose a path that doesn't involve making a living from tennis, they're still championing, I can't even say the word, the sport, you know, with among their peers in whatever industry they're in, but also hopefully getting involved by volunteering for local junior tournaments, local college matches, at their local high schools, and really talking up the college tennis experience and the value to be gained from playing college tennis in some way, shape, or form, whether that's varsity or tennis on campus or simply, you know, being a supporter of the team on your campus.
Yeah, I think that's one of, and we'll have several staff members involved, but I think that's maybe the most important thing to me. I do worry about our sport, Lisa, and sure. worry that other young individuals coming through won't have the same opportunities that I had. And also, you can imagine, you know, if these student athletes sit on this council for 2-3 years, maybe what they're learning behind the scenes, they start recognizing, oh, okay, that there are constraints. Because, you know, people throw out, oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you know, it's so easy. These people are idiots. You know, we've got all the answers. And for them to, at an early age, see some of those constraints, what are some of those limitations? You know, how do we best deploy limited resources, that certain decisions are more complicated than they actually seem on the outset, for them to start learning that at age 20, 21, 22, and then be able to infiltrate other committees, maybe make an impact a little faster, because, you know, you sit on committee and first year, you might be like, oh, I don't want to say anything because I'm just not used to this. And, yeah, I'm really excited to see where these student athletes go. How do we at the ITA keep them involved? How do we ensure they stay involved and match them with maybe careers in tennis opportunities? Maybe someday they're working with us at the ITA. Maybe someday they're sitting in my seat, which fantastic, but we've got to get them involved and keep them involved for as many decades as possible. We just can't always rely on the same volunteers year in, year out to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah. Well, not to mention the resume value of serving on a committee like this, you know, and I spoke with, I had Coach U on the podcast recently, and I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're kind of taking advantage of the NIL rules to provide mentoring opportunities for existing college tennis players to mentor junior players and to get paid for that. And, you know, gaining that skill set of sitting on a council, of working as a group to problem solve, to generate new ideas and see them from, you know, idea to implementation, and understanding how you get funding for things, understanding that sometimes when funding's not available, you have to get really creative and find other ways to make things happen. All of that is so valuable for these student athletes to take into their next stage. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, you know, kids that are pursuing tennis at a high level don't typically have opportunities to have summer jobs or jobs during school. They don't have time to gain that type of experience. Mm-hmm. And so this is an opportunity to really gain some valuable skills that they can take into their next steps.
Yeah, no, we think so. And hopefully that will be worth the trouble of applying. And they do see there's something on the other end of it while providing that feedback to us. I mean, really what we do, I mean, we're a coaches association / governing body, but really what we're doing is putting together an infrastructure for college tennis. We do all the boring stuff. We certify officials. We make the rules. You know, we work on legislation with the NCAA, stuff that, you know, most people don't want to do. We're doing that, but that for the infrastructure for these student athletes to play. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we're serving our coaches, and it's kind of a coach membership, team membership, but it's really an infrastructure for these student athletes. So let's give them a say in what that looks like. Let's see what comes through here in the next year.
I love it. Well, Dave, before we wrap up, I just want to ask you, is there anything I haven't asked you about that the ITA is doing that we all need to know?
Well, not necessarily ITA. I just love to give a plug for the NCAA Combined Championships here in a couple of weeks. Hopefully your listeners know that for the first time ever, the NCAA are combining Division I, Division II, Division III. over kind of a 10-day period. So each event will kind of bleed into the other division. It'll start with Division Two. As that's ending, Division Three will be starting. As that's ending, Division One will be starting. And so, we're going to have our convention out there. We're going to have our Men's Hall of Fame induction ceremony going on. It's going to be a true celebration of college tennis. And so we just ask your listeners to follow along at wearecollegetennis.com. We'll have all the links to the streaming and television and times and everything else they'll need to know following the draw for the various different matches that are going on. So, just really want to plug that and get as many people who have even a vague interest just tuning in so checking it out. I mean, the better our social media impressions are or the viewership, the more that people will take notice of college tennis. So anything people can do to support that, if they're out there in Florida and can buy tickets and want to come out and watch, please do that as well.
It's so fun. It's so fun.
Incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. And that's the thing, when you watch it on television, that's one of the limitations. You don't capture, because it's six courts, it's hard to capture that same feeling. But you go to a dual match at that time of year with all the pressure and the parity, right? I mean, it's inches. Yeah. Between these teams. And so, yeah, if anybody's within a reasonable driving distance of Lake Nona between, you know, May 10th and May 20th, I guess, the individual NCAA D1 individual tournament will be May 22nd to the 26th. But if you can get there for the team dual match, there's nothing like it.
Nothing like it. So fun. So fun. Well, kudos to everybody involved in making that happen. I'm anxious to follow this year and kind of see how the logistics work. And it's a lot of matches to cram on the campus, but the campus is massive. So, I'm looking forward to hearing only good things. Yeah. Dave, thanks again for coming on. And again, the website for the ITA, wearecollegetennis.com. Follow them on social media. They are very active on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Do y'all have a TikTok too? I don't even know.
You have a TikTok now.
Okay. Yeah. That's outside my wheelhouse. But definitely follow along, because that way you get to learn about the different divisions, the different schools in each division, the different players and why they're choosing the schools and divisions they're choosing. And, you know, you guys have really stepped up your efforts in showcasing players, showcasing coaches across the various divisions. When I first got involved, you know, it seemed everything was D1, 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 and the rest of it was kind of tucked away and you had to really dig to find information. But kudos to the ITA for starting to shine a big old bright light on every division of college tennis and everyone involved in those various divisions and teams. So yeah. I think, you know, anything we can do to help the public understand that college tennis is not limited to top tier Division I. There's so much more.
There's so much more. No, thank you for recognizing that. And as a former coach, yeah, I've seen the evolution of the ITA and, you know, been a privilege to be part of any improvements over the last several years. But yeah, we're just going to continue to do that. There's nowhere else you can go to really learn about all the different stories of the coaches and the players and the teams. We're getting into our award season right now. So we'll have our player and coaches award announcements in early June. Then we get into our academic awards and we'll be celebrating. Again, we don't see the different, you know, a student athlete experience at one division versus another. They're still having hopefully a great experience and learning a lot and making lifelong friendships and getting their education and everything else that comes with it. So, you know, a lot of people want to focus on the entertainment value at the top. I didn't get into college coaching because I thought it was a great product to watch, which I do believe it's a great product to watch. Yeah. I got into it because of those life lessons, the experiences that I had as a college coach. As a college player, the influence the college coach I had on me. And that's why we get into it. So all those stories are important. Nobody's better or worse than anybody else. That's great. that one player has a better forehand, who cares? You know, the character and integrity of that individual and what are they trying to give back to society? And so there's just so much more to it. There's so many more layers to it. So any individuals looking to learn more, check out the rankings. You know, sometimes that's a good starting point for recruits. Okay, let me see the rankings and get familiar with some of these school names at the different divisions. And they might not recognize they have this juggernaut of a D2 program in their backyard that they didn't know about. And they go on, they see, oh my God, this school's ranked 3 in the country and have these amazing players. And so, yeah, utilize our website. It's not perfect. There's a lot of information on there, but it's a million times better than it was 5 years ago. And we'll continue to refine and make it better, make it easier for people to find results, find rankings and any other information that they need to help with this process.
Love it. Love it. Well, Dave, it's always a pleasure to see you and to speak with you and to learn from you and keep up the great work. And, you know, we're here anytime there's information that needs to be shared with the Parenting Aces audience. You have an open invitation, you, Tim, Danielle, whoever wants to come on and talk. We love having you. So appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lisa. This has been fun as always.
Good. To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.